And welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of April 10th, 2021. So it turns out there's some interesting developments here in Massachusetts in terms of the grid, how we think about the grid, and how we achieve the goal of 50% reduction of carbon dioxide emissions by 2030. And it is it's an interesting story. Let me lay out the background. So in Massachusetts, there are big utilities, NSTAR, Eversource. Most people are familiar with that. But it turns out that among the 350 towns in Massachusetts, about 40 of them, roughly 10% of the towns, have their own little tiny utilities, their own little entities, and they're called municipal light plants, right? So they're like a tiny utility in a town. And those utilities have been under the radar for a long time, have not thought much about greening up their grid in the way that the state has greened up the big boys, the big utilities most people are familiar with. So you've got an MLP in a town. It turns out that those MLPs have all talked to each other, and they have sort of a upper level organization of the MLPs. And this is a funny acronym, and we say MWEC, but it stands for Massachusetts Municipal Wholesale Electric Company, MMWEC, MWEC, right? MWEC sort of caretakes for the MLPs, the 40 little MLPs that are floating around. So this MWEC organization recently has decided they want to build a new power plant, but a particular kind of power plant. They're going to build what's called a peaker plant, as in peak demand for electricity. So they are proposing to build a natural gas power plant that will only come on for short periods throughout the course of the year, but will provide power at peak demand, like in the summertime when everyone's got their air conditioning on, to try and help these 40 MLPs around the state. So question with that is that this is now being done in the context of the recently passed Next Generation Climate Bill, which sets clear goals for carbon emission reductions, which is a little bit of contrast with building a new natural gas power plant. And so there's some things you need to think about. There's a peaker plant being built by MWEC for the municipal light, the MLPs. Because this is such an interesting story, we are thrilled to have with us today the executive director of the Massachusetts Climate Action Network, Sarah Dooling. How are you doing, Sarah?
I am doing fantastic, Ted. I'm so happy to be here to talk about this really, really fascinating situation that has emerged over the past month.
So, Sarah, thank you for being here. And tell me, did that little description I get, did I get the story right? I mean, what would you correct in what I said?
Well, it's great to be here, Ted. And this is such a fascinating story, especially, you know, in the context now with the governor signing the climate bill into law. I want to step back a little bit and be really clear about what a municipal light plant is, because it's really kind of unusual. They've been around since 1892. The first one was founded in Wellesley, or established in Wellesley in 1892. There are 40 across the state of Massachusetts, and they are public utilities. And that stands in really sharp contrast to the investor-owned utilities, which are privately owned. And so it's really important to understand that MLPs, these municipal light plants, are the idea is that they are incredibly responsive to residents who are their customers. And they are embedded in the communities. The idea is that they work closely with local government and with residents who are their ratepayers.
And that's in contrast to the investor-owned utility, which is, I mean, there's NSTAR or NGRID, I think.
National Grid.
National Grid.
Eversource, right?
So those are the big, big enchiladas out there, right, that everyone is familiar with, and that's their privately owned for-profit, and that's the distinction, right?
Okay. Yes, yeah. Exactly. And as a utility, as a ratepayer for InGrid or Eversource, you don't have a clear pathway to change how those companies invest in, you know, renewable energy or energy efficiency technologies compared to munis, municipal light plants, where residents are appointed or elected to what is called a light board. And that's part of the ways in which these munis are governed. So the idea is that these munis are, they function somewhat on the ideals of democracy. They, in a perfect world, they would be fully transparent about all the decisions they make about where they put their money. And they would be immediately responsive to changing resident ratepayer preferences about the energy portfolio mix. The flip side to munis is that despite being around since the early 1890s, there is minimal regulatory oversight. That is beginning to change. And I believe you alluded to this in your opening remarks. So in the climate bill that Governor Baker signed recently, for the first time, municipal light plants are now required to meet emissions standards, 50% non-emitting electricity by 2030 and getting to net zero emissions by 2050. And this is huge. And so this is, again, this broader context within which local muni decisions are being made. And all of these munis, have two sort of upper level associations that lobby on behalf of them, that do some of the multiple muni district financing for really big infrastructure projects. And so the one that you referred to, MWIC, is involved in put together what is called a power sales agreement for a peaker plant in the town of Peabody in the muni district of Peabody Light. And there were this contract, though, MWIC has been shopping it around since 2015.
And so just if you give me back up, we're talking about a power sale agreement, which is a mm-hmm. contract between some of the munis mm-hmm. in MWIC to buy the electricity that MWIC will eventually generate at a plant that is to be built in Peabody, Massachusetts. And that particular plant is called a peaker plant because it only turns on once in a while when the demand is high, right?
That's partially right. So I recently learned there are two different kinds of contracts.
Okay.
So there is a power purchase agreement, which is the what you were describing, where munis commit to purchasing a percentage of the projected energy being produced from a project. The power sales agreement is slightly different. And that is actually a contract that for the munis that have signed onto it, they become co-owners of the infrastructure. Hmm. And this particular power sales agreement for the peaker plant is such that for those MLPs that have signed, that they are required, their financial commitment remains and they have to meet it even if that plant does not come online.
And that's a big it's a big number. I think that this MWEC organization is requesting something like a permission to get $170 million. That then
that's correct.
Comes the burden of the in two mm-hmm. chunks, but that would then become the burden on the
ratepayers.
Local MLPs, and by implication, the ratepayers. If mm-hmm. something bad were to happen to that peaker plant and never got built, they would still owe the $170 million, right?
Well, yes. So there are a couple of different scenarios I want to emphasize here. One, given this larger policy context, right, that MLPs have to get to net zero emissions by 2050, but before that, they have to purchase 50% non-emitting electricity by 2030. So that's their first priority of business from a clean energy perspective. Investing $170 million in two different bond issues into a form of infrastructure built on dirty fuels has the likelihood of actually not operating its entire lifetime because of the momentum and because of the increasing commitment to having our energy sector, private and public, really begin to ramp up clean energy, renewable energy, battery storage, solar storage, all of these other kinds of technologies that will help them meet this mandated goal that has been passed into law by Governor Baker. So the idea of what is called a stranded asset really comes into play here. So imagine investing $170 million into a piece of infrastructure that does not operate all the time, that will most likely be pulled before it has reached its end of life.
So pulled meaning not used anymore.
Correct. Ceasing operations before before those bonds have been paid, right? Before the financing has zeroed out on the books.
Because they can't square the carbon emission reductions with the operation of the plant.
Correct.
And just flashing red light for, another vocabulary word, right? Stranded asset is a word that people need to hear about. It's based, the concept you just gave, that you build something and then before it's fully used up because of carbon emission reduction demands, you have to stop using it. And so why the heck did you build it in the first place, right?
Right. And I think it's important to remember that this, way back in 2015, a lot of the clean energy technology and the battery storage technology was not as mature, was not as standardized in some ways as it is now. So 6 years makes a big difference in terms of the maturation of technologies. And MCAN's position is that now is the time, with MWIC going through the permit review process with the Department of Utilities for this project. Now is the time before the financing is locked in and before all of these MLPs are beholden to this kind of dirty fuel infrastructure. Now is the time to revisit the assumptions about how this peaker plant gets built. Now, and this is really important. So there are precedents of solar peaker plants outside of Massachusetts. MCAN, we don't yet know what is a truly viable alternative to a natural gas and oil powered peaker plant, but we know that there are alternatives.
And just again, just to remind everybody, because it's so easy to get confused, the peaker plant is something that is able to respond on a very short, like 15 minutes notice, right, to turn on and provide power again on that incredibly hot day in July or in an incredibly cold day in January when you need that last little bit of power, right? And so the peaker plant has this very special job, one of the features is that it can turn on quickly. And so what you're saying is there are technologies that are renewable that combine solar power with what are called storage technologies that hold that solar power, and then they can dump that power on the grid in 15 minutes if they need to, and it's clean and it does the same job as this ugly fossil fuel thing that's being proposed, right?
Yes, in theory, that's absolutely correct. To translate that into this particular context, we still need to figure that out. Right. So this is an engineering opportunity. This is a design opportunity. How can we design a clean peaker? I think that is a fabulous challenge. And now that MWIC is going through the permitting review process with the Department of Public Utilities, MCAN filed for what is called intervener status, which basically would allow our organization to raise some of these issues that we are talking about right now, and to give different ideas, put different ideas forward, and to basically do discovery and have access to all of the reading that is part of the DPU process for reviewing permits for this particular project.
And it seems like it's a good way to give voice to the desire of the MLPs to be building the right thing, right? To do it right this time, which implies new technologies and have a thoughtful way to build it better, right? Because you have this intervener status, which is a legal thing, right? It's in front of it's a thing that's granted. It's not something you take lightly, and MCAN is seeking that, right? Yes.
Correct. We don't have it, right? We filed to request it, and that would be granted by the Department of Public Utilities. And when that happens, it's sometime between now and perhaps late April, early May. I do want to emphasize that MCAN has always been committed to MLPs in terms of their ability to innovate, their ability to be so responsive to resident desires for more renewables, more non-emitting sources of energy, for more rebates and other kinds of resource allocations to improve access to energy efficiency programs. So I don't want to give the impression that we are targeting PBD light, that we are targeting these MLPs specifically in this oppositional way. What I do want to emphasize that MCAN's commitment to MLPs being part of the climate solution now is taking on a different dimension. We cannot, I offer to everyone listening on this podcast, we cannot afford to put forward any more dirty energy kinds of infrastructure. This is a new era. We have so much federal stimulus money to support clean energy, research and development, and all kinds of energy clean energy technologies. And this particular peaker plant, even though it's proposed to not function very often on an annual basis, you know, is associated with, because it's using natural gas, some severe health risks, especially for those two environmental justice communities that are adjacent to where the peaker is proposed to be built. And for those of you listening, an environmental justice community are it's a special designation in the state of Massachusetts that says this community, based on race, income, and linguistic isolation, so where English is not necessarily people's first language, that these kinds of communities have a long history of being exposed to polluting facilities. And to propose that this particular peaker, which again is going to be at this point in time powered by natural gas and oil, these dirty fuels, next to two environmental justice communities, only adds a further dimension of absurdity in some ways. It's also adjacent to a school, so you're going to have, you know, very young people being exposed to toxicity.
It seems like the engine of the democratic engine of the MLPs is a fascinating way to drive change through the system, right? It's this fabulous opportunity to do things. So I think that the MCAN's representation of the MLPs is a good path. The other thing I would say is that from what I've seen, the peaker plant in proposed peaker plant in PBD, there's too many P's in there, the proposed peaker plant in PBD will have a compressor station and storage of nasty chemicals on site. So even though the thing only turns on once in a while, it's not a nice thing to have a half a mile from your house, right? And so there you go.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely correct. Absolutely. Yes, and in fact, there is an organization MCAN has been partnering with called Climate Code Blue, and it is a group of physicians that are really organized around raising awareness of the health risks and the safety risks associated with compressor plants. A compressor station. So we have to compress natural gas to ship it around. And in compressing natural gas, there can be all kinds of unexpected problems like explosions.
Yeah. Weymouth, which we can go off on another hour and a half of. What are the next steps? What can people do? How can they help? Or what should the listeners know about what's going to happen?
This is a great question, Ted. Thank you for this question. So I think, first of all, just learn more about the PBD Peaker Plan, and you can go to MCAN's website, and Ted will share the link.
Yes. To the March newsletter.
To the March newsletter, and you can learn all about some of the specificities of this particular contract and the specifications for how the Peaker Plant is intended to be built. And all of the issues surrounding where it is proposed to be built. Definitely check out our March newsletter. In addition, MCAN is holding a fundraising event this coming Wednesday, April, help me out here, 14. Ted.
April
14, 6 to 7 p.m. And for those of you who would like more information about that, feel free to contact me, and Ted will share my email out in follow-up notes. And I think most importantly, the Department of Public Utilities has opened up the public comment period for this peaker plant. And for those listeners who really do want to submit written and speak at the virtual meeting coming up, that information is available online. The deadline to sign up to submit written and or do written and spoken comments is April 16th. Oh, let me just double check that very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. One moment, please.
Yeah, sure. Sure. Mm-hmm.
One moment. 19th, April 19th. And you can go to our website, and we have all of the information about who to contact at the Department of Public Utilities.
AskClimateAction.org, where you can dig up the information.
Yes. The actual public hearing is on April 26th at 10 a.m.
And that's, of course, going to be on Zoom, so people
that can. Will be a virtual public hearing.
Mm-hmm. Here's a stupid question. Number one, how do you know you're in a muni district if you're not aware? And two, why should you care about this if you're not in a muni district?
These are great questions. So we have a list of all the muni districts on our website. And so if you go to our website and you go to, I forget the actual tab, but we have all the muni districts listed. There are 40 of them.
But you can look at your bill too, right?
Yep, you can look at your bill as well. Absolutely. So why should people who get their energy from InGrid or Eversource care? Because climate change does not vary by utility district. We are all vulnerable to bad investments. You know, this is in many cases, in many ways, investing $170 million into a plant that, if built with dirty fuel, will actually continue to aggravate and undermine the health of environmental justice communities in Peabody. However, the risks from the compressor station, the air pollution associated when the peaker is on, that moves around. Mm-hmm. That's not only just for Peabody. So for the original 14 MLPs that signed on to this contract, the consequences of pushing this plant forward continued on dirty fuels is most, they are the most impacted. But we're all impacted by bad investment. Because right. At the end of the day, the 14, now it's 12, to have a petition to withdraw, Holyoke and Chicopee, mm-hmm. municipal light plants, want out of the contract. But the munis that are still remaining in this contract, that money now is completely invested in dirty energy. And what it does for those munis specifically is constrain their ability financially to explore clean energy, renewable energy, innovative energy technologies. And so in many ways, this investment really impacts the munis as a whole.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When we look at them in the aggregate, it impacts their ability to be climate innovators, to really help everybody in the Commonwealth transition to a clean energy future.
Wow. So, dear listener, check out the MCAM webpage, massclimateaction.org. There you will find information about the peaker plant. You will find information about, if you send an email to Sarah, you will, and that's mm-hmm. on the website, you'll be able to get into the fundraiser, right? And it mm-hmm. matters no matter where you live in Massachusetts, no matter where you live on the globe, but let's just talk Massachusetts. No matter where you live in Massachusetts, it's a good thing to be interested in and understand. So I will put up links, all the stuff we just talked about, at the notes page for this show, which is going to be, again, at the massclimateaction.org/blog location, so you can go find out what you need to find out. If you have questions, you can send an email to the podcast at the email podcast@massclimateaction.net. And Sarah has her own email, and you can get to her through the website. You can sign up and do everything on the website. You can listen. You're probably listening to this show on your smartphone using one of the podcast distribution apps. Please ask all your friends to use their favorite podcast distribution app on their favorite iPhone to listen to us as well. I want to thank our friend D.R. Tucker for his continuing research support week after week. We love it, D.R. We want to close where we always close, by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, and that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. Because of that, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our future. So, Sarah, thank you so much for being here. Really, I hope you can come back, because this is like a... if I had a Chiron, I could run across the bottom of the podcast. It'd be breaking news. I mean, this is a developing situation. I'm sure there'll be more to talk about soon, and I hope you can come back. And thank you for being here this time.
Oh, it was a real pleasure to talk about this, Ted. And I just want to remind folks that one of the reasons we are initiating fundraising is that our DPU intervener status filing is very expensive.
Yeah.
And so our fundraising goal over the next month is $10,000. And beyond that, looking out an additional 6 months, $40,000. So $50,000 in total. And if we are successful and we are granted intervener status, that means we are coming back with more asks. And a second ask after the DPU hearing at the end of April. If you hear from me, that means we're doing good. It means right. that we are pushing forward And we are, you know, in an ideal world, we will be granted intervener status. And then that's when a lot of those legal fees kick in. So in other words, this kind of campaign is really strategic and very expensive. Mm-hmm. And this was not something that was necessarily in my sights even 2 months ago. And this is, again, this really deepens MCAN's commitment to really working with and pushing our public utilities to be part of the climate solution and raising issues around, let's build this plant better. If it's needed, let's build it better. Let's, you know, make sure the MLPs are serving their ratepayers better. So with that, thank you all for listening.
And we'll talk to you all again real soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.